trouble, see, I'm home.
Hi, guys. Welcome back to Having a Ball podcast. I am your host, Erica.
And I'm Lucy.
This is our third time trying to record this today because we're having technical issues, but we are back and, you know, finally recording something together. So it's good to be back. And today's episode we are reviewing is Inferiority Complex. This is the 53rd episode of I Love Lucy and the 18th of season two. We're still in season two. We're still here. We live here.
Are we like halfway through at least?
I don't know. And we live here now. So this is co-written by Bob Carroll Jr., Madeline Davis, and Jess Oppenheimer, aired February 2nd, 1953. And this is another one of those My Favorite Husband episodes based on that Liz's Inferiority Complex. Have you heard that one?
Oh, yes. I was actually going to say, I listened to it right before this, and until Ricky talks to the psychiatrist, it's almost word for word.
Oh, no way. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, there's the difference in the bank friends and boss, you know, instead of the Mertzes, but really it's almost word for word. The jokes, the stories, it's very, very similar.
And so the synopsis here is that Ricky kind of announces to the Mertzes that Lucy's been kind of feeling down in the dumps. And it was centered around her hospital mates having triplets and twins and her feeling bad for only having the one child, which is bizarre to me. And so she's kind of feeling down on herself. They make the episode funny because the show is funny, but it's really kind of depressing in a lot of what we go through, rather, you know, after having a baby or just in life, really. And
yeah. We were talking about this. So one, it could be argued that what she's feeling is postpartum depression. Because I know for a lot of women, it's like a really great time and it, you know, you're bonding with your child and you're not depressed. You're super happy. You're tired, but you're happy. But for about 15% of women, there's postpartum depression, which is just a depression that comes after the pregnancy and treated with medicine and stuff, but that's kind of what it sounds like she has. And also we were talking about this, but she, according to Ricky, she has been in the hospital now for about 2 weeks,
which is
her and the baby, which just seems like a long time.
Yeah. And you just hit on something, much like a lot of things in the 50s aren't touched upon and wouldn't be even mentioned, much like pregnancy. They certainly wouldn't even grasp what postpartum depression is. And so that's what this inferiority complex is. And as we go through the episode, you can see all the different moods that she goes into, that it's very much reminiscent of that. And for the description of an inferiority complex, I have, it's an umbrella term describing chronic feelings of inadequacy and insecurity. And people with an inferiority complex may experience chronic self-doubt, have low self-esteem, and feel the need to withdraw from social situations, which we pretty much all feel many times.
Yeah, but maybe not chronically.
No, you're
not consistently,
chronic.
You know.
That's true.
Where it starts to kind of impede on your daily life. And you'll see, you know, with Lucy, where it starts to affect like when she gets up and things like that. And then you've got to wonder, like, is that depression? You know, she hadn't had the baby in this because this is a flashback. So she hadn't had the baby, but it could just be plain old depression that she's dealing with. Yeah. And not an inferiority, because they were just all being rude to her, really.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, what friends? We'll get into that.
You mentioned that it's a flashback. And so the first couple of minutes, it starts off with Ricky having gifts in his hand. He's holding up kind of a jacket sort of thing. And he's in the living room. And much like we've mentioned before, anytime she's feeling down about anything, the remedy seems to be gifts, you know, chocolates. Yeah. Or flowers. And so here he's talking to Fred. Fred walks in like, you know, what's all this about? And he's like, well, I brought her gifts because she's feeling bad. And like you mentioned, she's been there for a couple of weeks, which, is she okay? Because usually,
yeah,
after a day.
a day or two. Yeah.
Yeah. And so he bought her candy, perfume at the hospital, and a bed jacket, which is just like a nighty sort of sweater see-through thing with like a fur collar. And
she's got to look good for everyone, you know. But I was thinking, like, and here's Lucy, there's a episode where she's in the hospital and she goes all out. I mean, she's got a night jacket like this, and she's got makeup, and she's got the perfume. So maybe back then it was more, maybe even still now, maybe I just look like a bum every time I'm in the hospital, but maybe it was more commonplace to
none of us
look nice in the hospital.
Yeah. And none of us ever look great after having a child. But I do remember that when I had my daughter, my cousin, who's my, you know, my best friend, she had a bag of makeup. She said, "We're going to take photos before you leave with this baby, but you're not going to look like you were hit by a train." So she's putting makeup
on, nice.
Like holding this child, you know, and I've got my face full of makeup, and I'm just like, "Is this necessary?" "Yes, you'll thank me later." And I do. So maybe that's where she's at. But so yeah, it's Lucy or Ethel comes in, you know, after Fred has tried on the sweater. "Oh, nurse." And she comes in and saying, "Yeah, you need to go to the hospital for another reason," and explaining that she's not feeling well, to Ethel. And so she says, "We have to be careful so she doesn't get another inferiority complex," which tells me this girl has suffered through some depressive moments in her life, you know?
Yeah. Well, at least this one that we're about to see, you know. And of course, as you know, Ricky's leading into this episode, right? Or this flashback, he goes, "You know, I don't know what could have started this. I have no idea why she's started feeling the way she was feeling. We were just having dinner or whatever. We were hanging out and out of the blue." And of course, as you watch it, you go, "I can understand why she was feeling the way she was feeling."
Not out of the blue. This certainly was
not
out of blue.
No.
And I think she handled it, all the things we're about to mention, better than I would, because it's just really mean, some of it. So they do the flashback to remember. Because of course, Lucille Ball at this time is during her maternity, right?
In yes. The
episodes are about. And, you know, they're all telling jokes. Now, I sympathize, or is it empathize, with Lucy, because I can't tell a joke to save my life. I hear jokes and I want to come home, tell my husband and repeat them. I butcher them. I can't deliver them like I heard it. And it makes no sense at the end. So, you know, it's, you know, and he can do that.
I don't tell jokes that often. So I don't know if I'm a good joke teller or not.
Oh, jokes. And yeah, so I guess Ricky's the storyteller of the family, you know, and what is it? He's telling the joke about the dog going to the movie theater, and he's like, "I don't know. He hated the book.
Yeah.
And then what I love is Ethel's trying to explain to Fred, "The dog read the book."
And Fred's like, "Oh, no, I know. I got it."
Okay.
The people that explain jokes are just the worst. Like, yeah. Okay, we get it. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. You have to explain it, then it's probably not funny. But
yeah,
so here, you know, we've seen this a couple of times, kind of like when she did the stag party, that women get very offended with certain jokes, right? And so Fred's trying move into this joke telling of a fat fella that went into a Turkish something or another, and I couldn't figure out what he was trying to say because she stops him, and it's from something called a mixed company. And so I looked up what mixed company was, and I couldn't find the exact, you know, thing that they're just referring to, but what it is in general is jokes that are offensive to people you can't hit with everybody in the room. It's going to offend somebody. Kind of like Twitter.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, mixed company, that's a joke that you would, that a man would probably tell with just other men.
Right.
Not women as well. And yeah. Of course, Lucy says, you know, we're not mixed, we're married.
Right. Yeah. And so he keeps trying to tell this story about the fella in the Turkish something or another. And she just keeps interrupting him. Ethel does. And so, you know, it's always, they do that a few times throughout the series where ladies are offended by certain jokes. So Lucy's like, let me try to make a joke, right?
And yeah, she's like, I know one. And so, and yeah, it's suitable for mixed company.
Right. Do you have the joke? Do you know the joke?
I didn't write it down. I remember it, I think. Yeah. See, I could tell it like Lucy.
Yeah. I actually like her joke, even though it made no sense, which is what, someone at a restaurant ordering something to eat, right?
Yeah, she's ordering, oh my goodness, what are they?
It's a pork chop, but she...
It's a pork chop, and she said, well, she says she wants, they want it with no fat, and the waiter says...
Which way?
And everyone's just looking at her like, that is not a joke, or it's not funny.
How proud she is of herself, because she thinks she delivered it. And yeah, so everyone's like, it doesn't make sense what you just said. And so, of course, hero Ricky comes to save the day, and he's like, you missed the most important part, which is a pork chop leaning. And
make it lean.
And so he's like, which way? Which is... funny,
which is a little bit more funny. Of course, Fred goes, he says, well, either way, it's not a belly laugh.
Yeah. And he's so serious too. Love.
Yeah. But at this point, you know, I think this is when Ricky's like, well, you've never been able to tell a joke, like, as long as I've known you. And yeah, this is when it starts getting mean. And, you know, Ethel's like, well, don't be mean. Like, it's not her fault. She can't tell a joke.
Oh my God. You know?
And Lucy, at one point, she's like, yeah, for sure. They're picking it. And Lucy, at one point, she says, you know, well, I'm sorry, I'm no Milton Berle. And she actually does, or he comes on to, does he come on to this show? I know he's on I Love, or the Lucy show, for sure.
Lucy does the Comedy Hour, I believe.
Comedy Hour.
Okay,
yeah. And here's Lucy.
Yeah. So they go back a long way. So the Milton Berle in there. And, you know, it's like you said, it kind of starts with the ball rolling of insults here. And they're like, oh, forget about storytelling. Let's play cards. Right. They're going to play, or did they just say cards?
I think they're playing bridge. So, the four-handed. And this is really random, but do you still have a card table? Like, do people still have card tables to play cards?
I have a backgammon table under a very old table. So the top of the table, you know, you can remove
that's
the top.
That's super cool.
Yeah. Really, really old one that was gotten from a thrift store. So that I do have. Have I played it? No, but I do have it.
I love backgammon.
It's a fun game. The one is Lucille Ball's favorite pastimes. And so it starts off with, let's play bridge. And this is where the rest of the insults come from, because they all clamor to play with Ethel.
Yeah, well, Ricky like sits over, he pulls his chair up next to Fred, tried just to like butt Fred out, and was like, you know, I just like to play with Ethel for a change. And that's when they're like, all right, we'll flip a coin for it. And Lucy stands up, she's like, don't bother.
That is so insulting. That would make me feel so, listen, she's taking it, no, she's not taking it better than I would, because she starts to cry and feels really, really down herself. And that just would hurt my feelings, that, you know, that everyone is feeling, I mean, not even Ethel's like, let's make it girls again. I mean, eventually she does, but everyone is just like on board with the insults. And she said, it's pretty obvious that no one wants me for a partner. I'm going to the bedroom and tell myself funny stories and play solitaire.
Solitaire.
Cry. It's like, oh my God. It's just so sad.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I feel like when I said I love this, but like it's, I don't love how they're treating her. But right. I do think that her reaction, at least tonight, is totally valid.
Oh yes. Yeah. No,
I don't know that it would have made me bedbound, but but you know what? At first it didn't, right?
Because if you are on the verge of depression, it would take
very little.
Yeah, very little to just throw you over the cliff. But yeah, this is
and there's another scene, and I forgot about it, that pushes her over the edge. Mm-hmm. And that's where she makes breakfast for Ricky.
Now here's where, like you mentioned, the postpartum, but this is a flashback, so there is no postpartum going, but maybe a depression, is that she doesn't wake up depressed. She went to bed depressed, right? I'm assuming. But she wakes up kind of cheery and happy to see Ricky in the morning, because she starts like, oh, hi, darling, you know, and it's the mood changed until it all starts to fall apart again. And it's breakfast time. And she says, she's very sweetly downplays herself. Like she really puts herself. Yeah,
like I've been thinking about it and you're right. You know, I'm not a good joke teller.
Yeah, she says, you know something, I'm not very bright. I don't do things well. And it just saddens me to know that she's just putting herself down because of what everybody else is telling her. I mean, there's a bigger message here than just funny news. I mean, we could get into it, but just, you know, the macro of it is really, really sad. And so he says, you're the cleverest and most fascinating woman I've ever met, which could have been used before, but, you know, and so she's, you know, feeling better now with the bit of compliments. And step one, she forgets to strain the orange juice. And he kind of
seedy.
Yeah.
Yeah. She double salts the eggs.
Oh my God.
Which, you know what? I actually never, this is just random again, but until I met Colin, I never seasoned my eggs while I cooked them. Like I just waited until after. Like I did put seasoning on my eggs.
Oh, okay.
But I waited until after it was cooked.
Okay.
And like 100% for sure if I was cooking for someone else, because who knows if they like this, but I guess husband and wife like probably know what your significant other likes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just recently started seasoning my eggs beforehand. But yeah, so she double salts the eggs because she forgot she salted it the first time.
And then she burns the toast and it's not
I love in the oven
because she knocked over the toaster and broke it. I mean, this poor girl is not catching a break anywhere. Just breaking things, burning things. So of course
I tell you I broke my toaster?
The classic one that you posted, the one that you have? I think I had
the green one.
Yeah.
The green one.
The toaster?
Yeah, I really liked that one. Yeah. It was on the back of our oven.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the stovetop that does, it's not gas. What is it? I don't know.
Electric.
But you turn it on, electric. There you go. You turn it on and it takes a while before you realize which one's on, right?
Yeah.
And I accidentally turned on the back one instead of the front one. And all of a sudden I smell burning. What the heck is that? And the bottom of the toaster had started burning.
Yeah.
And so we had to throw it out. I was very sad. So
now
we have, my parents gave us one and it's all right, but we'll probably buy a new one because I want my retro one looking one. But anyways,
retro one. Yeah. And so she, of course, is now feeling awful all over again. She tried to pick herself up, but everything just kind of
went.
And she begins to cry. Uh-huh.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I was just jumping to the next part where, like, he goes, you're good at a lot of things. And then can't name one thing about his wife that she's good at.
Again! It's
awful. You should be able to name at least one thing about your significant other that they're good at. maybe not the best at. You don't have to say like, oh yeah, you're world renowned in this, but like, oh, you're really good at whatever. Even if it's like housekeeping. I know that seems mundane, but that's a big thing sometimes, like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not recognized as much, but she does say, let's face it, I'm a big fat flop. And they can't, you know, he says, you can do a lot of things, name one. And you just said he can't name the single thing. So she's depressed and he leaves, I assume, to work.
Isn't this where he says, you know, you've got to stop because you're going to get an inferiority complex?
Oh, she says, I don't need a complex. I already am inferior.
That's it. Yep.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah.
That's bad. That's really sad. And, you know, again, it's a bigger conversation we could have. You know, we need a whole other podcast for that, but it's really a symptom of depression and mental health. And especially during, you know, COVID and the years that followed, a lot of people have been suffering with things like that, loneliness, depression, you know, job loss, things like that, where it just kind of it crawls up on you. It just kind of appears, you know, and suddenly you're now in a depressive state. And
then when the people that are closest to you can't name anything about you that's you're good at.
They don't want to play games with you because they don't think you're good enough. They don't think you're funny. It's just an avalanche of depression. And even in the 50s, I don't think they ever talked about that. So that's what this is here. And so Ethel comes over and she, well, I think this is the next day where she's in bed.
She hasn't gotten up yet.
She's wearing a very cute long kind of dress pajama that she wears. And Ethel comes in like, whoa, what are you still doing in bed? Right. And again, this is going to sound like a mental health episode. That's a huge red flag when someone doesn't even want to get out of bed, because that's really where depression starts to hit you. You're upset that it's daytime. You want to go back to sleep because depression. And so she's feeling, you know, really, really awful. And she comes in, Ethel does. And why are you still in bed? And Lucy says, I was going to get up. And then I asked myself why. And why? there I had me.
And that's, I think, whether or not they were trying to pinpoint a real problem or not, or if they were just writing, you know, I think they did a good job of kind of showing like the thought process of what someone in that state might actually feel, but also in a way she delivers it in a way that still somehow makes you chuckle, you know?
Yeah. Like I try to convince myself that I'm worthy of getting up, but even I couldn't give myself a reason to get up, which is also sad. And so she says, you can do a lot of things, Ethel, just like Ricky tried to earlier that day or the day before. And so, yeah, name one.
She's like, and what? Yeah. and again, like, she can't name one either.
These people are mean. And I'm sure, based on who Lucy was in the show, she could think of something for all those guys. You know? Oh, yeah. And so Ethel's like, and he's like, yeah, Ricky thought of those same ones too. And then she does this where she says, no one can get their hair the shade that you can. Thank you. She says, hold on, that didn't come out right.
Lucy's she like, said, neither did my hair.
Oh man, that's when you're really, really pulling at something to compliment her. So
yeah,
then I think that's when Ricky comes in and also is like, why are you still in bed?
Because I thought we sorted this out, which I think is interesting. Like
I thought I made it.
We had a phone call. I told you, get up. Obviously you should have gotten up.
I need dinner. Yeah. And of course, then she, you know, has a discussion with Ethel, because she's now they're starting to get concerned as to why this is going on so long. And they all agree that she needs to see a psychiatrist or a physiatrist, as Ricky calls it.
Yeah, he says he's going to call it
physiatrist.
Yeah. This is where the episode gets weird. I mean, it was already, but like extra weird. Like the fact that, because Colin was watching this part with me and he goes, are they allowed to do that? Like, are husbands allowed to go in and just talk to a psychiatrist about their
That's
wife?
what this is what I wrote on my notes. What's funny is that the doctor is not for Lucy to talk to, but for the two men to talk about her, which
Right.
is perhaps a sign of the times sort of thing, where it's like, I'm the man, I know what's best for you, so let me go sort that out and get you your solution, as opposed to let's make you a an appointment. Because even then, even if she did have the ability to make her own appointment for a woman in the 50s and the doctor's a man, what kind of advice or treatment would be given? Like, maybe if you make a better dinner for your husband, you might feel better. Maybe if you dress up nicer
There
for
you
your
go.
husband,
Yeah. You might feel better.
you might feel better, you know. And maybe if you got up earlier and cleaned faster, you know. So it's just curious as to what this strategy is, which is let the two men get together. We know what's best for her. And of course, he says, you know, get her flowers, get her candy. I did all that and it didn't seem to help. And again, it's not remotely close to what can help her, you know?
She needs, yeah. In my favorite husband, she, Liz, who's, Lucy's character, does go to the psychiatrist with Ricky or her husband, George. And so George speaks to the psychiatrist first, and then Lucy speaks to the psychiatrist and basically has the psychiatrist tell his life story to her, and doesn't
Wow.
say anything to him.
No HIPAA regulations at all back in the early 40s. And so his treatment, quote unquote treatment, is flattery from another source. Because if she's feeling down about herself, and clearly your opinions and compliments are not working, they need to come from someone else, which is kind of like when your child, you tell your child to do something over and over, and they don't, you know, it goes over their head, but grandma
Someone else says it.
or their friend's mom is like, do this, and they did it. I'm sorry, what? My daughter, I used to always, you know, she'd come and tell me, so and so's mom said to do this or to wear this or to do this. You mean the thing that I told you not too long ago? So it's just, you know, that's the advice he gives, flattery from another source, and that at 8 o'clock tonight, a tall, handsome man will appear at the door and call him Chuck Stewart, an old friend.
Real quick, I'm sorry, we forgot to mention that Gerald Moore plays this character. He plays Henry Mullen, MD, the doctor.
He has
And
quite
Hen.
the upbringing. Okay, go ahead, sorry.
Oh, I was just gonna say Henry Mullen is the film editor for I Love Lucy. So that's that. What were you gonna say?
Oh, I was going to say this actor, the one that you are referencing that plays the psychiatrist, Gerald Moore, was kind of into B film noir back then, and he kind of had a strong, they said, resemblance to Humphrey Bogart, very, you know, tall, dark, and handsome sort of guy. So always like the leading man sort of roles, and he was typecasted into things like that. But he was born in 1914 in New York City, and he was the son of Sigmund Moore and Henrietta Naumstedt. I hope I'm saying that correct. She was a Viennese singer. In 1920, his father was killed in a tragic accident while at work when Moore was 5 years old. And he was raised primarily by his mother and maternal grandfather, who was a psychologist and associate of Dr. Sigmund Freud, which
Oh,
is,
wow.
yeah, interesting. So, I mean, he has a long list of movies and films up into, I think, Barbra Streisand's Funny Girl. So he had an extensive career, you know, but here he's playing the psychiatrist and he makes himself the tall, dark, and handsome guy that will show up at her door at
8 o'clock. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, we'll talk about that when he shows up. So Ricky's like, all right, wonderful. Thank you so much for helping me. He goes home, and the next scene is, you know, Lucy sitting dressed up. You see her in that, like, what is that? Is that a house
kind of like dress? Yeah, her hair is done nice, really pretty. And she says, you know, why did you have me do my hair just to sit here in the living room? I guess she hasn't been wanting to, which is another sign of depression, not wanting to get up and get yourself all dolled up and all that. So that's when he says he has a friend coming in from out of town, a Chuck Stewart, and he wants her to meet him.
Right. And oh my goodness, the look on his face when he opens the door and it's the psychiatrist. Like,
this he's is the most bizarre, so confused. Bizarre moment in these episodes, because the unrealistic place you have to go to think that this is okay is,
oh yeah,
quite a stretch.
I mean, yeah, the fact that not only is the psychiatrist showing up, happily showing up at her house, like, to play this role of, like, flattery and hitting on her, but, like, he also goes way too far with it.
Very inappropriate. And
on top of everything else, she's actually actively pregnant in this, like, you know, as they're recording this. I know that they probably don't, that's not where they are on the timeline.
Yeah.
But, like, you can tell that Lucille Ball is a pregnant woman, and the psychiatrist is making, you know, advances at her.
Right.
Which is just kind of interesting.
Yeah. It's uncomfortable. Just, you know, again, everything is done under the umbrella of comedy. And I mean, what we do here is pretty much go through it and say how we would feel, what things would be like today, the reality of something like that. And
could you imagine a psychiatrist showing up at your house?
It's so bizarre. It's really bizarre.
And hitting on your significant other? No.
No, I'd have about 2 to 3 seconds of that and just say,
oh yeah, Ricky let it go on a lot longer than I thought he would.
So let's paint a picture here. So what he does is he comes in and she's sitting there looking, you know, down in the dumps again, and Ricky's like, oh, still in shock that it's him, but anyway, trying to play along. And it's like, this is my friend Chuck Stewart, hi, how are you? And then this reminds me of, remember when the French actor, they're in Paris, and he comes in and, Lucy, I must have you. It's kind of like that. And so he comes in and he's like, you know, he's taken aback by her beauty, and he tries to, you know, kiss her hand, and that again starts the uncomfortable moments of it all. And she's not flattered at first, I think.
She's confused, I think, because this man that's not only a man, but a man that's supposed to be Ricky's friend is, like,
hitting on her.
Flattering. Yeah, so much so. Like, it goes past just giving her compliments to hitting on her. Yeah. And so I would be confused too. I'd be like, I thought you were his friend. Like, what are you doing? Yeah.
Who is this guy? I mean, that would be my first concern. Like, you know, predator or something. Who knows? Yeah. But yeah. So then he's like, he asks her to dance, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, Ricky tries to turn on the music, right? To distract them.
Right.
He's like, let's listen to some music. And of course, that makes him go, oh, let's dance. And I love when Lucy's like, no, you guys can dance. You two dance.
You two go ahead. I'll be in. Yeah. And he's like, no, I want to dance with you. You've only, sir, stranger, Mr. Chuck Stewart, you've only been here for 30 to 40 seconds. And suddenly you are taking over the room. And so everyone sort of goes with it. Ricky's kind of like at the edge of his seat, because
I was going to say, you can see him kind of fuming there.
Like, oh, yes. a Cuban man
wanting to say, yeah. I
mean, no. And so what I love is that he turns around and he goes, Ricky, it's part of the treatment, you know, and Lucy's like, what? Oh, I was just asking him if he knew, it's musician talk, if he knew what this part of the beat meant, which is really an insult to her intelligence to think that she didn't just hear what she heard right next to her face, you know, gaslighting her. And, you know, they continue dancing and very, very closely. Now, also, even though it's wrong, Lucy should not have gone along with it. She was falling into it.
Oh, yeah. She was like, hey, look at this.
Good at herself.
Tall, dark, and handsome.
Yeah, tall, dark, and handsome. And so, you know, they continue dancing and Ricky goes to turn off the music. He's like, I'm tired of dancing, even though he was just sitting there the entire time. And they continue. I mean, she's lost in the moment, right? She continues dancing. And then he's like, you know, the music has stopped.
The music's off. Yes. Yeah.
And she's like, treatment, Ricky, treatment. What do you know about treatment? And, you know, every time he says that to you, you leave him alone. So she wants this flattery to continue.
I mean, to be fair, on the flip side, like, people haven't been showing her appreciation or any sort of flattery, even, you know, non-romantic flattery. And so, like, to have someone come in and be just over the top, that might have just been like, oh, I need that.
Yeah, she just kind of, like, lost herself for a minute.
Yeah.
And so he says, you know, I don't like where this is going, Ricky, because again, there's only so much time he was going to be able to put up with this. And so they finally tell her the truth that he's a psychiatrist. He's not a friend of his. And, you know, this is part of the treatment to get her out of this slump. And he gets mad. Like, he wants to continue this. Right. And he's like,
is weird.
Yeah.
It's obviously working. Now leave. Like, don't fight to stay there.
He's like, you'll get my bill in the morning. That's how upset he was. And they closed the door. Yeah. And so then Ricky turns around and is like, I'm sorry I had to do that, but at least you're fixed, right? And she's, nope, she's back to...
Well, I mean, how would you feel if you've been...
Yeah, tricked.
Tricked into thinking that those compliments were real or, you know, and then just find out it's all fake.
Yeah. And so back to depression. Yeah.
Yeah, and so Ricky decides to go to the option of just lots and lots of flattery.
The opposite.
Right, where, by everyone. So Fred and Ethel come up and they're like, we're just going to have her tell lots of jokes and laugh at all of her jokes or stories and want to play, all fight over, you know, playing bridge with her and just really make her feel good.
It's like they're talking about a child, like, patronizing her, like they all just like treat her like she's five, and you know, it's just I don't know. The whole thing is just so sad. And that they have to fake it, you know. And so that's the group decision to all compliment her the next day. And Lucy comes in you know, from the room, and she's like, oh, Fred and Ethel, I guess you came to see Ricky. I'll just go back in the bed, sit in the dark. So she's still not feeling it. And they're like, no, we're here to see you. If you're not going to stay, then we might as well leave. You know, now they're like really overselling it.
Oh, yeah. You know, because then they even say, you know, we were sitting downstairs and I said, the person I wanted to see the most in the whole wide world. And Fred said, who? And I said, Lucy Ricardo. Okay.
That should have been her hint. But
yeah,
anyway.
Well, also, I mean, not only that, but then they ask her to like tell a joke, right? And Ricky says that she's the best little storyteller or like the best storyteller he's ever known. I mean, that's another way of like, you're thinking, is she just stupid or does she just want to understand or like keep these compliments? Because he literally just said a few days ago, she was the worst
You've joke never teller told he'd ever met. Story, a good story in your life.
Right.
What?
But now all of a sudden she's like, wait, really? You think I'm the best?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I think she starts to tell a story. And then every time she kind of stops, they think she's done and they start laughing, you know. And what was funny was that part that you mentioned when she says, I told Fred, you know who I want to see? And he said, who? And I said, Lucy. And what did he say?
Oh, you know? Yeah. They acted like it was a joke.
Yeah.
And then she tells a few jokes then.
And they decide to play bridge again.
Bridge.
She again depresses her because she thinks, oh, great. Now they're all going to fight over Ethel again and nobody wants to play with me. And they're like, no. You know, Ricky's like, I'll play with you. And then Fred's like, I'll play with you. And then Ethel's like, no, the men against the women, you know, and this isn't how to treat depression.
Fake maybe. Flattery, no.
Yeah. And so she's starting to feel good about herself because they're putting the bridge table together. Everybody wants to hear her jokes. Everybody wants to play with her. She's like, I'm feeling so good. And now next thing you know, you're going to want me to sing. And they all freeze.
They're all like, oh, no. We've got to say yes. And so they do. They're like, yeah, go ahead. And she ends up singing a song from Who, which is the 1925 Broadway show Sunny by Jerome Kern and Oscar Hammerstein II. It was just super big. And she just sings it really poorly. But then she stops like halfway through and she's like, I'm feeling so much better. And it pans over to their faces as she starts singing again. And you just see like, this is going to be torture for them. It's
going to be really hard, yeah. Because if, you know, of course, the story here is that Lucy can't sing. So they got to let her go to kind of get her out of this slump. But that's pretty much where it closes, where she's singing happy. So they got her back to the point of happiness, which was the goal. But yeah, this whole thing was like we mentioned, a bigger, more important message about how we can go through slumps like that. And, you know, if you're surrounded by people who don't understand what's happening, it could really get, I think, worse, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And because we were talking about the radio show, the radio one, the way that one ends, George was on the phone with the psychiatrist. And that's when the psychiatrist said, you know, all of you guys should laugh and humor in her and everything like that. And so they do the exact same thing, right? Except she goes on all night. Like they fall asleep. She tells every joke and every story she knows. And finally she says that she lets it slip that she knew the whole time that they were just humoring her because she'd heard it on the phone. And they were like, wait, you knew this whole time? Why did you let us go on this long? She said it was the only time she'd had all the attention on her and she liked it, which in itself is sad.
Yeah, it is. It really is. Yeah. But like we mentioned, this is one of the handful of episodes that they did for a flashback during Lucille Ball's maternity leave. And I'm not sure if I liked it. I mean, I don't. It was uncomfortable with the whole psychiatrist thing. And you have to suspend some reality as to how people would actually handle a situation like that. But, you know, it was for licks and giggles. So, you know, it's appreciated.
It is what it is. Yeah. And again, another, you know, episode of its time. I don't think an episode like this would air now.
Yeah.
Or do very well if it did air, you know, but
Certainly not a stranger coming in and just, you know, touching on someone's wife like that, you know?
Yeah. So it was one of those episodes where like, I can watch it. I definitely don't skip it, but
yeah,
I don't search it out either.
Forgettable. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It is.
Well, with that.
Well, with that, find us everywhere. Next weekend, and hopefully just, you know what? It's good to be back because we hadn't done this in a while. We had technical issues earlier, and, you know,
we thought it would maybe not happen again.
Yeah, seriously, but we're making it work. But thank you guys. If you want to send us an email, havingaballpod@gmail.com. We're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, also all under Having a Ball Pod. So thank you guys.
Thank you. Bye.